Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. Hey, from Los Angeles, the big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally on the following platforms: iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Mixcloud, Listen Notes, Blueberry, Player FM, Podcast.com. and VIP Internet Radio. And of course, our membership website, CaregiverDave.com, voted number 2 best caregiver podcast of 2017. We're real proud of that, where all our recorded pod and video casts are saved for your later on-demand listening pleasure. And if you have any trouble finding us, just Google 2 words, Caregiver Dave, and I'll be there, like Michael Jackson said, I'll be there. And our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. We don't want to go there. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian. Could not make it, unfortunately, so I'm all alone today. But that's okay. I used to do it all alone, and I can still do it all alone. And today, we will be interviewing Kathy Pendleton. And Kathy is a best-selling author, passionate speaker, and determined patient advocate. So you need somebody like this in your corner. You will not want to miss your show, caregivers. And I'm Dave, as I said, the Caregiver's Caregiver, and this show is for caregivers of every kind to help them stay alive, because 30% of you actually die before your loved ones do. What's that all about? And 60% get sicker needing a caregiver of their own. Hello? And if that wasn't bad enough, roughly half of you in a study have confessed to feeling down, depressed, and hopeless in just the last 2 weeks, the same symptoms that others who have taken their lives have felt. And suicides are in the news a lot lately, right? So Kate Spade and Robin Williams and, of course, Anthony Bourdain, Kurt Cobain. So this is an important show we do here, so let's get started. But first, I want to take this time to thank my last week's guests, Emmy and Grammy winner, author, speaker, songwriter, singer-songwriter, Janie Lighty. And just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and all our interviews right on our website, caregiverdave.com. Well, let's get going. Kathy, let me read you a short bio on how wonderful this woman is, because she's so humble she may not say it all. Kathy is especially dedicated to patient and family participation in medical decision-making and avoiding hospital mistakes. That's a biggie. Her 15 years of experience in monitoring, helping, and asking endless questions during numerous family hospitalizations have strengthened her belief that, number one, no one cares more about our own health than we do. Amen to that. Number two, it's our own responsibility to ensure that we avoid medical errors both in and out of the hospital. And number three, while doctors have years of training and experience in medical knowledge, we have even more years of experience and knowledge of our own bodies. Now, she lives in Central Florida with her husband, where she runs her business, Get the Care You Deserve. I like that name. So a big welcome to my guest, Kathy Pendleton. Welcome to the show, Kathy. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Why don't you take a minute or two and just introduce yourself? I like to ask my guests, who is Kathy Pendleton and why were you put on this earth? And then we'll get into the questions.
Interesting question.
Yep. I'm an interesting guy.
So I think that it took a while to come around to it, but I think that this is the reason I'm put on this earth. I've been interested in medicine all my life.
Were you almost a doctor?
I thought about being a doctor. I did, and I succumbed to parental pressure and
They
became
didn't want you to
something
be a
crack.
doctor?
No, because
Oh my
women didn't
gosh. They
marry, right? And
obviously
women
weren't
stuck.
Jewish.
This was a long, long time ago, right? That I was doing this kind of planning.
Oh, you
And
mean
so,
girls
no,
should
they
just get
didn't.
married? Is that what you're
That's
saying?
right. That's
I
right.
see. I
That's
see.
right. Although my dad's brother was a doctor and he married a doctor. So
Oh, lucky him.
yeah, she was a pediatrician. Anyway,
Yeah.
all of that stuff, I just have a tendency to remember a lot of that stuff. I like reading about how medicine and illnesses have affected history. One vacation, my uncle and I were on vacation with, his family together, and he and I shared a book called The Journal of the Plague Year. And so who reads that stuff, right? But what I've discovered is that I like thinking about the complexity of this whole issue and attempting to reduce it to some simple steps that help all of us to get better care and avoid medical errors.
Well, that's a very important point. Caregivers are in charge. So I was my wife's caregiver before I knew I was a caregiver because she had a headache for 3 days, and I was caring for her, rubbing her head. She never had a headache before, not this bad. She wanted me to call Dr. Kevorkian and put her out of her misery. And then on that fourth morning, she just exhibited symptoms of a stroke, and the paramedics came and they confirmed she had a stroke. And then they asked me the most important question I would ever be asked, and I wasn't ready to answer it. That question was, where should we take her? Now, that seems like a simple question, right? Well, take her to the hospital. But there were two hospitals. Closer one near my house, a privately run, small, rinky-dink kind of hospital that doesn't even have an MRI machine, or the larger medical center about 7 minutes further. Well, I said, I don't know, where would you take your wife if she was having a stroke? Well, they elected for the closer hospital. As a result, my wife lost her speech and is paralyzed on her right side for 22 years now. And if she had only gone to that other hospital, she'd be fine. So you see, not having information and knowledge can be disastrous. Isn't
It can be
that right?
disastrous. And I want you to know that these days, most of the training is that they do automatically take your family member to the closest hospital.
Yep.
Now, if that's
But if I would
not a
have
part of
said the other one and disagreed, they would have
yes.
done it. But see, I didn't
Yes.
know. But I know now.
Exactly.
I'm ready.
And if your doctors are, if you are all set up, that is, you have doctors who practice at a hospital that's slightly farther, then get them to take you there, even if you have to push a little bit. Get
So
them to
you
take
agree that the a little a few extra minutes is worth the risk of having a facility with better doctors, state-of-the-art equipment, etc. It certainly was in my case.
Well, it depends on whether they're not breathing, right? If they're excuse me, if
Good
I
point.
would say that if it really depends on what's going on. But
Yeah.
yes, if you're set up at the hospital that's farther, all your medical records are there, you're not
Yeah.
going to die in the next 2 minutes,
Right.
then yes, absolutely.
That's right. In that case, seconds would count. In my wife's case, and I didn't know this at the time, because I was a dummy, that when you're having a stroke, you have 3 hours to fix it, or you're going to be brain damaged. So we could spare an extra few minutes to go a little extra further in our case.
Right.
So how did you become
Yes.
interested in patient advocacy? Caring for family members, stuff like that.
Well, this has been going on with me for a long time. I think the first time I was involved with this was when my grandmother, when I took care of my grandmother after she came out of the hospital after a stroke. But when I really started paying attention to what was going on, was about 20 years ago, when my mother-in-law was hospitalized. Then my father-in-law was hospitalized for nearly a year. He was in and out of the hospital. And last year, for the last year and a half, My dad was, his wife passed away and he was 89, and he decided he wanted to live at home. And so he had neglected his own health care, and I lived with him for 3 months. And then I was living in California at the time. I would go from California to Virginia once a month just to make
Wow.
sure that everything was still going smoothly, and that there wasn't anything that he really needed somebody to be there to take care of. And so I did that for a long time. And then the last month of his life, he was in the hospital most of the time.
My wife's mother has been hospitalized. She has dementia, but she doesn't know she has it, so she's not, everyone is stealing from her. Can't keep a caregiver because she calls the police on them. This is missing, that's missing, somebody stole it, and every single day. And it's just really, really hard. We had her hospitalized because we wanted to have her checked out, and they brought her back after 4 days because they says we can't keep someone in here who is mentally unstable, only physically unstable, because new laws have been passed to protect the rights of seniors and so on. And now she's a danger to herself because she should not be alone. And so we're just going crazy trying to find a facility that will take her and her dog and her power wheelchair, because a lot of
Oh
them don't do
my.
that.
A lot of
So
them don't do that.
a lot of them don't do that.
A lot of them don't do that. Wow.
So what was, you seem like such a nice, calm, friendly, pleasant person, but I wonder what you'd be like if a doctor is doing something that you think he shouldn't be doing, or telling you something, or not telling you something that you think you should know. Do you turn into like a Jekyll and Hyde? Do we
Yeah,
see,
I did that. I did that. I only did
red?
that once. It was terrible. It was actually terrible.
Really?
I found myself, it was when my mother-in-law had back surgery and she came back to her hospital room, and there wasn't pain medication. She was in a lot of pain. We asked for pain medication. It didn't come. I went down to the nurse's station and asked again, and they said it's not here. I mean, they kept
That
saying
sounds so
kind of
familiar.
innocuous things, right? That just didn't. I said, look, just tell me what I can do. I'll go get it myself. Just tell me how to make it happen. And so finally, yeah, I turned into a screaming banshee in front of the
The
nurse's station, and
squeaky wheel
it
gets the
was like,
oil in the hospital, isn't that
actually, well,
right?
no, that didn't work.
Really?
But why? No, that didn't work. And the reason that it didn't work was this. When I went to my friend who was a is a pharmacist. At that time, she worked in a hospital as a pharmacist. She didn't miss a beat. Her voice didn't change. She said, oh, the doctor forgot to order it. I never,
Yeah, a little
crossed
honesty
my mind.
is yeah.
It never crossed my mind. And of course, the nurses on the floor would never, ever say that, ever.
Yeah,
But this was,
truth is very important in the hospital.
it was a week or two later that I found this out, or that this was even presented to me as a possible solution. But what I did at the time was I was working on a bunch of self-improvement stuff, and I had done some visualizations, and I was unable to get anything from the nurses, and so I went back to my mother-in-law's room, and my father-in-law was there, and they are not woo-woo at all. And I
Woo-woo.
couldn't, yeah, not woo-woo, not the least bit. Well, I'll get to that part. So they, so I'm thinking, oh, should I do this? Are they going to think I'm crazy? Are they going to think I'm going to do some witchcraft or something? So I went over to my mother-in-law, and she was whimpering. You know how you get when you're in so much pain? And I whispered in her ear, and I said, all I want you to do is listen to my voice. That's the only thing right now. And we're going to go to some place warm and safe and a place where there is no pain. And I started describing a place where we would go as a family. And the kids were there, and everybody was there, and it was at a beach in Hawaii, and we were in the sun under the palm trees at the beach, and
I'm feeling
And I
better
just
already.
kept, yeah, and I just kept talking about it. And she actually went to sleep.
Wow.
And when I stopped talking, I probably talked for 10 or 15 minutes. And when I stopped talking, my father-in-law looked at me and said, "I didn't know you could do that."
Well, tell me, what was the most unexpected thing that you learned about caregiving? Even though taking care
Oh,
of. Go ahead.
that was, I thought about that question. I like that question, Dave. That's a really, really good one. But the thing that I think was the most unexpected that I learned was the companionship aspect of caregiving. It's
Explain that.
not, well, it's not all about bringing in the medication and making sure the water glass is filled or that, the blanket's tucked in the way your loved one loves it or that they're comfortable. They're a lot of times they're lonely. They want someone to talk with them, to sit and talk with them. Being there for me, I enjoy being there. Some people have a difficult time with it. I enjoy being there. And
Well, that's the
so,
good part of being a caregiver. That's the part that everybody loves. And unfortunately, they let the part that everybody hates, the actual duties or changing diapers or putting up with temper tantrums or not having the ability to confront and have healthy boundaries. They lose sight of the good part of it. And if they would just remember that, then that minus part, that negative part, is really less important and it's less fulfilling, but you get so much fulfillment out of having the joy that you'll put up with the negative stuff. Find
yes.
that?
Yeah, that's true. And it is tough. It's not a fun thing. But that was the surprising thought part when I thought about it was the companionship piece. And for sure there are times when they're not companionable. They're not someone you necessarily
They're not
want to
lovely.
be. They're not lovely. But the reason that you're doing the whole thing in the first place is love.
Yep, that's what made you do it. That's what
What
made you
made me
sign on
do
the dotted line, even though it wasn't on your resume and you weren't prepared
Right.
and you had no idea what you were getting yourself into.
That's what got me on a plane to fly all the way across the country and back once a month, for
Well,
sure.
so did you ever experience burnout like a lot of people do because you didn't take care of yourself?
Sure. I was living at my dad's house and he does things the way he does them and I do things the way I do them and he likes it warm and I like it cold and
Yes,
there's just
I'm the hot one, and my wife's the cold one.
Yeah. And so there were a number of things, but at the when
What were your
the
symptoms of burnout? How did you know you had it? Or I'm sure you didn't know you had it, but what were your symptoms that you now know you had it?
I didn't really set myself up. I didn't contact my friends who lived in the area. I
So
didn't
you
say
neglected yourself, you isolated
I
yourself.
did. I
Okay.
did.
Anything else?
I did.
Did you eat right? Did you sleep right?
I did not sleep right. I gained during the year at that year and a half, I gained 30 pounds.
Oh my.
I'm still working that off.
So what
But
advice would you have for people who maybe don't realize they're burned out, some red flags, some warning signs, and what they can do to get out of that rut.
well, if you have a healthy way of eating, continue to follow that as much as you can, especially if you're the one who's preparing meals, for sure. If you take a walk in the morning and your loved one can be alone, right, for some length of time, say half an hour, 15 minutes, go for that walk, right? If they take a nap, and you can be out of the house. If they're not going to panic because you're not there when they wake up, you know, go for that walk.
And, you know, technology is good because I bought my wife this camera that scans and zooms, and I can hear her voice and she can hear mine. And so, you know, you can see it right on your phone. So if you are going to take that 30-minute walk and hope that they don't wake up or anything, you've got the thing and you can just keep checking it. And if they do wake up, you can say, hey, everything's fine. I'm just walking. I'll be back in 5 minutes or whatever.
Well, that's good. I don't know. You know, I don't. Is there a way that you can leave their phone on? So that your voice will come through.
Maybe like a speakerphone. So if you have a second cell phone, just make the call, put it on a speaker, and that way, you know, you can hear them and they can hear you.
Okay.
That way you don't need to.
There are a lot of times that would.
But even the cameras, they're not that expensive, a couple hundred bucks, and it's pretty amazing. That's how we watch my mother-in-law. Because she's 2 hours and 15 minutes away, and we just can't be there all the time. And her other son lives in Minnesota, so he's further away.
He's even further.
Yeah. So why did you stay active in patient advocacy after your various episodes of caregiving and advocacy? Were you a glutton for punishment, or you really got some joy out of it?
No, I was I saw a lot of little piddly things go wrong, and they may not cause a lot of trouble, but that could be the thing that kills someone. My dad was a fall risk. He lost a leg in Korea, and he's a fall risk because he only has one leg, and he's not sitting in the bed with his wooden leg on. Or it's not wooden anymore, of course. That was when I was a child. But one of the, and as he got weaker, it didn't matter whether he was, you know, using his leg or not. He was unsteady. And so it said on the wall at the door and inside the room, fall risk. So for people who haven't experienced this, fall risk means that they are not to be left alone when they're in an unstable position, period. End of story. Until you have sat them down in the chair that they're moving to, or they're back in bed from a trip to the bathroom, the attendant doesn't leave. So this, whoever they were, my sister-in-law was there, came and got my dad, took him into the bathroom, and started to walk out of the room. And she spoke up. Hooray! My favorite thing, speak up. Right? She spoke up and she said, he is a fall risk, you know. That guy turned around so fast and came right back and stood by the door of that bathroom. There's just no way around it. You as a caregiver or as the advocate, as the attendant, as the family member, you have to watch out for your loved one.
Yep.
And if you're alert when you're in the hospital, maybe you can be watching out for yourself. But there are plenty of times if you're taking a painkiller or if you're sedated in any way, then you're not going to be alert enough to watch out for yourself.
And my wife was a fall risk just 2 weeks after her stroke. So, you know, she's paralyzed on the right side and she's going through physical therapy and stuff. And so some nurse or nurse's aide or whatever they were took her to the restroom and didn't realize that, you know, she has drop foot on her right side. And so she fell and broke her ankle right there in the hospital while she's trying to recover from a stroke. So now she's got this big cast on her foot. I don't know if it helped her therapy or not because they made a walking cast and she was able to walk on it better. But, you know, somebody wasn't doing their job, and it happens all the time, doesn't it?
It happens all the time. It happens all the time.
Because everyone is only human.
Everyone's only human. and you wonder, how can these things happen? But the doctors and the nurses go in and out of one room after another.
Right.
If that fall risk sign is there, after a while, they probably don't even see it. Just the way we don't see our keys where we put them on the counter, right, as we're trying to walk out the
amen
door
to that.
Searching all over the house. So there's a level of familiarity and being at ease with what's going on that the medical professionals have that we don't have. We don't share that. We're sort of, you know, worried and anxious about a lot of what's going on, and we're a lot more likely to be paying attention.
And of course, they have a very nice name for it. It's called medical errors. How bad are those medical errors?
Any well, they're the third leading cause of death in the United States.
Third, huh? Wow.
Third, right behind cancer and heart disease.
Mistakes.
Mistakes.
That's scary.
And it's probably higher. It's actually probably higher because if you're already in the hospital for pneumonia and there's a mistake, your death is probably going to be written off as complications from pneumonia.
Yeah.
But you have to go back through what happened before and figure it out. You know, what actually started the episode that led to their death. And medication errors are fourth. Right behind medical errors are medication errors.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
Listen, we're going to take a break and let people just contemplate on what they've learned so far. When we come back, we're going to talk more to Kathy Pendleton. So do not go away. We will be right back.
David Nassani.
Best-selling author Dave Nassani.
Dave Nassani is a best-selling author.
Mr. Dave Nassani.
Thank you. So you're needed.
I am needed.
You are very much needed.
The woman I loved had suffered a massive stroke.
Yes.
They tell you in the event of an emergency, oxygen mask will drop. Yes. Put your mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask.
For the next 2 years, our lives had become a living hell.
Everyone has one of these. It's called a cell phone. You turn it on, you punch in your number. Hello, Mom. I need help. Grandma's driving me crazy.
I realize there are so many other caregivers out there who are hurting and feeling lost and alone. And I didn't want them to hurt anymore.
So now I host a popular iTunes podcast, The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Yeah. And I even shared the stage with Suzanne Summers at Harvard.
Come and join our community of caregivers. Let us love on you. Let us support you.
Dave is an amazing man. I was in tears when I heard his story.
Dave is really my idol because he created something for caretakers. And I was a caretaker for my father.
Every caregiver's life is a love story. Let me help you make that love story one of hope and triumph. Thank you very much.
And we're back with Kathy Pendleton, and I'm Dave Nassani, the caregiver. Excuse me. The caregiver's caregiver. Wow. So Kathy is a patient advocate, if you just tuned in. And we were talking about mistakes that hospitals make and third leading cause of death in the U.S. And, you know, people aren't perfect. And we're not here to blame them because mistakes do happen. I just made one today for the first time this year. How do you come up with... situations to, Kathy, this is a question to you. How do you come up with situations or questions to ask? You know, let's say you're feeling a little intimidated because they are doctors or they are nurses and they know much more than you do. And a lot of them kind of condescend and talk down to you. And when you ask them what you think is a silly question or what they may think is a silly question, you think is a very important question. You know, you're kind of not openly ridiculed, but you can tell that passive-aggressive, and so you say, well, I'm not going to ask that again, you know. But what should we do? We shouldn't be intimidated by doctors and nurses, should we?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. as you said at the beginning, I really believe that we know as much about how our bodies work and how the bodies of our children work. The information is just as important, just as valuable as all those years of training that they have. So for me, when doctors are a little bit dismissive or act like they're sort of itching to
God.
Get out of the room, they're sort of moving sideways in that direction, that kind of thing, I'll start I'll make friends with the nurses. I always make friends with the nurses.
That's wise.
And I treat them very, very nicely ever since I had to backpedal for the next week.
Yeah, you get more out of a nurse when they like you, you know.
When they like you. And your patient, family member, your loved one who's in the hospital mm-hmm. probably does too. They're not going to want to come in the room if you're still a raving lunatic, right? Or you're still going to snap at them every time they walk in the door. So I always make friends with the nurses. I try not to ask them questions around the time of a shift change.
Yeah.
They're very busy then. But I'll ask them, you know, is this a good time to talk to you? I have a few questions that I need to know about. And I think, you know, I can help you do your job better. I can let you know how they're recovering or doing anything like that. But I try to get as much information from them. And then, now this is not, you know, your best way to get information, but once I hear words that I don't know, I look them up online.
Ah.
Yes, the old online thing. And that's not, Wikipedia is probably...
I bet they hate that.
Wikipedia is probably not your best medical source.
Yeah.
But once you know what a few of the words mean, then you can start looking at other more legitimate sites like the Cleveland Clinic, the Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins, Journal of American Medical Association, places like that where the information is written.
Yeah, you can come back and sound intelligent and say, hey, doctor, you know, I read about a study done by the Johns Hopkins Institute that, you know, strokes have a new procedure that has given patients 60% faster recovery time. Have you heard about it?
Right. Or that's, you know, I don't
if
know
he says
if I
no,
say it. I
then you feel really silly.
Then you feel really silly.
Yeah.
Right. But I did hear of someone who looked up the various treatment options. Actually, you know him, Paul Becker.
Oh, yes.
Right? When he was in the hospital.
He was on this show.
He's terrific.
Yeah.
And he, you know, when he was hospitalized, he and his wife did a lot of research, and the doctor suggested one course of treatment. And his response was, well, that's definitely the best way in the short term, but there's this other treatment over here that, while it may be a slightly riskier in the short term, the long-term outcome is better, and I'd rather go for that.
He's spoken by like a true admiral that he is.
Absolutely. And he told me this. So there's definitely, when you know about your illness, or you know about, as we get older, there are a lot of things that are interacting together when we're in the hospital. And when you know how those interact for you, the patient, and you can share that with the doctor, or you can say, look, this doesn't really work for me because it affects this over here, they're going to start listening to you and paying more attention.
You know, when I was in the hospital for an infection that I had in my broken arm like 15 years ago, the titanium rod got infected after 15 years. And so they decided to pull it out and clean out the infection because the arm was healed anyway. But the nurse wanted to give me an injection in my stomach every single day. And I said, you know, I took the first one. It was very painful. And I said, what's that for? She goes, oh, it's for make sure you don't get constipated. I said, listen, I don't have a problem with constipation. I'd rather take a little pill if you think I'm at risk, but I do not want that needle. She goes, oh, okay. It's like, I should have said that yesterday.
How about that? I mean, isn't that amazing? I mean, no, that's a bother. And it's just amazing. But the point of what you just said and what I'm trying to say is that speak up. If a person comes into the room and you don't know who they are, speak up. I was talking to somebody recently. She stayed in her mom's room overnight, and someone came in with a syringe. And she was sleeping, but she happened to wake up and she looked at them and they weren't dressed correctly. And she said, "Who are you?" And they didn't answer her. They just kept sort of going about their business toward her mom. And she's like, and she stood up and said, "Who are you?" They ran out of the room. They were not a nurse or a doctor.
Who were they?
They didn't know. She didn't know.
Is your mother a double agent and Russia came in to take care of her?
Or did Russia come into the wrong room? I mean, who knows? But it's just some crazy things that go on. And heaven forbid, I would hope that wouldn't happen to nearly any of us in the hospital. But we have to speak up. If we don't see them wash their hands. I mean, that's the way diseases get transferred, right?
Yeah. How should we monitor what's going on without being, you know, a nuisance and start creating resentments from the doctors and nurses, you know, as a pushy SOB or whatever they call people like that?
I don't know what they call us, but I don't think there's really a way. I think that you need to be, and they're supposed to introduce themselves, but they go in and out of a lot of different rooms. I think you need to know who you're talking to, first of all. So many of the people in the hospital wear scrubs. You don't know whether they're an orderly. You don't know whether they're an aide. You don't know whether they're a nurse.
They're just picking up the garbage.
You have to ask. You have to ask who they are, especially if they start to touch your family member. You have to ask. Then you have to know what they're going to do. So I ask them what they're going to do. You know, what are you going to do? why are you here? Oh, just checking. But here's what I would recommend. If you've got someone who's going to be in there for more than like 2 or 3 days, even if they're going to be there for 2 or 3 days, you can keep a diary.
A journal.
Just a little notebook, a journal of who comes in,
when
they come in, what they do. And in there as well, you can keep track of how your patient feels. Are they feeling better? Do they start to itch after they got that shot? Right? Did something change about how they feel? Can they just not wake up after they get a painkiller? Or all those kinds of things, you know? And you can keep track of that because that's what the nurses are really, I mean, that's a lot of what they're doing, right?
Yep.
Is they're monitoring the condition of the patients on their floor.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a way to do it without being pushy. I think you have to be assertive. You have to speak up.
Well, tell us about some examples that you had in just trying to decide what's okay to do and what's not okay to do in monitoring this.
When my husband and I were both in La Jolla with my father-in-law, he could be with his mom, who was having some trouble getting around, and I was the early riser. I was in the hospital, but he had had a stroke, and so he was impulsive. He would get sundowners, which means that you lose track of where you are, typically toward the end of the day. Anyway, we had him move to right across from the nurse's station, and we hired a lady who was recommended by a friend of theirs to stay with him overnight. And I would go in early in the morning and relieve her, and my husband and his mom would come in. And then my husband and I were going to leave. His sister was coming. And so we ordered a bed alarm because there were going to be gaps in the time that there was anyone in the room. And that very morning, we walked into his room, me, my husband, his sister, and the lady who stayed overnight was getting ready to leave, and the bed alarm was off the bed. The very first morning that it was going to be there, it had been removed from the bed. And I had to go to the nurse's station and ask about it. I had to go. I had to go and say, why is that bed alarm off the bed? Because otherwise you're not going to know if he decides to jump out and go down the hall to his office.
Amazing.
You just have to ask if they're changing the medication in an IV bag, if they're friend of mine, her husband had a number of like kidney failure and diabetes and all these things, and she would go into the hospital and they would try to give him an IV bag full of fluids. Well, he had kidney failure. He was taking dialysis. And so they had to be very watchful of the number of the amount of liquids that he took in any one day. And she was the one who monitored that. I mean, somebody would
amazing.
Come in and say, oh, I'm going to give you this. Well, did you read his chart and see that this is also going on?
Yeah, you've got to get involved. You know, and if you feel real uncomfortable and real insecure, you know, like share slapping, get over it, you know.
I know, that's my favorite thing.
I told two people that today, just get over it, you know. And I even, now I just download the little short video clip and I just send it to them, you know, where she slaps him once and then she slaps him again. Snap out of it, you know. But
right.
The doctor who cared for my wife at the first hospital, you know, I was not involved at all. He did not consult me about what he's going to do, what he's going to try. Here's the problem. You know, do I have your permission to go this route? There's two ways we can do this. You know, we can take the more conservative route. We can take the more risky route. You know, what's your input? He just did everything by himself. And as a result, you know, 3 hours passed and my wife lost her speech because she was a perfect candidate for the TCP, TSP, whatever it's called.
Clot-busting
drug. But because the hospital did not have a CAT scan, only an X-ray machine, all they saw was a fuzzy little white spot, and they had to assume that it was leakage or bleeding, and that's not a candidate for someone who's bleeding because you'll bleed to death.
Right.
But if they had after they transferred her to the medical center after it was too late, the new neurologist told me, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, I never do that, you know. He was basically telling me all the things he did wrong, the other guy, that I always get the spouse involved because, you know, they're the ones who have to live with the consequences. And I would have been a little more aggressive with the clot busting drug. And so, you know, after a year was up, I tried to consult an attorney, and, you know, the doctors don't testify against each other, and it's just, you know, they cover their butts by putting in lots of notes in there in the medical record, and they just chalk it up to just we were being conservative, you know, because we wanted to save the patient's life, you know,
right.
Not realizing 22 years later the patient is still dealing with this, and there are some things worse than death. Sad.
Yeah, I have one of my doctors down here in Florida. Her father lives in a different part of the state, and they were visiting, and he fell, and she went to the hospital with him, and the doctors didn't even talk to her. She's
really?
Like, hey, I'm a doctor. Talk to me. Tell me what you're going to do. What are you planning on doing for him?
Amazing.
They didn't even talk to her. You have to. So here's my recommendation. Is to speak up. If you're nervous about it, speak up in a gentle way. Keep your voice calm. Speak up in a gentle way.
Mm-hmm.
Once you make progress, once you start to see that they're not averse to you asking questions most of the time. It just doesn't happen a lot of
right.
the time. And things just go their way. So start asking questions. Once you ask questions, then you'll get more comfortable with it, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
You'll get more comfortable being assertive. And I think we're all more likely to ask questions on behalf of a child,
yep.
right? Yeah. If you think, oh my God, what would I do if this were a 3-year-old that I was in charge of? I'm in charge of the life of this toddler. What am I going to do about it?
Yep.
I'm going to be like a tiger.
Mm-hmm.
And so just start having those conversations, and you'll become more confident.
Yeah, and a great way to get over being insecure and shy is just remember, well, you can either speak up now or deal with it 22 years later, you know, because it wasn't done right. Well, we're going to take another break. We're up on another break, so we'll be right back, and don't go away. Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. Will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver, on sale everywhere, and at caregiverscaregiver.com. Well, we're back with Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, and Kathy Pendleton, patient advocate. And she's pretty good, too. So tell us, dealing with doctors outside the hospital ain't different than dealing with the doctors inside the hospital, you know, where you go and you make an appointment and you have to wait for a long time to get the appointment. Then you wait in the office to see the doctor and you're on time, but they're not. That always gets me upset. So what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, that gets me upset too. So,
especially if they want to charge you. Like if you're late or if you miss the appointment, well, what about my time? My time is valuable. Right. I want to charge you. You said be here at 9. I'm here at 9. You don't see me till 10. Here's
or
my
10:30.
Bill.
Or 10:30. Yeah, I'm dealing with that right now. I'm deciding whether or not to change doctors. Not the one I was talking
would vote
about
yes.
before, but yes. I agree. It's not okay with me to sit.
You got to fight back with them. Otherwise, you're rewarding bad behavior.
So I check Yelp on doctors. I do because the kind of and I read the reviews, because a lot of times people give a doctor a review of one if there was a billing dispute or something, you know, and maybe it was a legitimate, but I do want to know things like whether the doctor's condescending, whether the doctor is on time, and that sort of stuff. There's not a lot of reviews in Yelp, but there are some. So I go looking there, but there can be as many mistakes outside the office, excuse me, in the office as there are in the hospital.
Really?
There is a book out there right now about a woman in Canada. It's a short book. And she went into the hospital and they said, she had a headache. You have a brain tumor, but that's not what's causing your headache right now.
Oh.
And she's like, no change of tone, right? No empathy. And she said, I what? You have a brain tumor, but that's not what's causing your headache. So she's like, wait a minute, I have a brain tumor. So anyway, but the point of it is not, they fixed whatever the problem was that was causing the headaches, and they told her that she should monitor her condition. She should keep track of her condition. She should have a brain scan every year that the tumor was stable, blah, blah, blah. So she started looking for support online. I mean, a brain tumor is pretty scary to be living with this time bomb in your head. And what they told her in this support group was to read all of your paperwork, every bit of it. And while the doctors had told her to have a brain scan every year, her paperwork only said to have a brain scan next year. Well, who's going to pay for it if you're paperwork only says have it the next year. Mm-hmm. So that kind of thing can be very, very tricky. You have
to read
monitor
those forms you sign.
And those forms you sign, right. You've got to know what you're signing, right? We all sign and that we agree to be treated and we agree to have this procedure and that we know the options. But do we know the options? Doctors have preferences just like we do, right? Some of us take Tylenol. Some of us take Advil. Some of us take Excedrin. And, you know, I don't like Excedrin, but... You know, so there's all sorts of things that have to do with what our preferences are versus what their preferences are.
Yeah.
And it's important to keep yourself, you know, when they say, well, this is what, you know, this is the way we always treat it. Well, but is it the only way to treat it? Right? Are you going for the root cause? I have one friend recently who got sick of the doctor specialist yo-yo, and it just felt like they weren't getting anywhere. But, you know, just like you said, getting those...
I actually knew someone named Yo-Yo. That wasn't her name, right?
No, it wasn't her name. But that's the kind of thing that we, just like you said, getting the referral, then getting the appointment and going there, then coming back, then getting another referral... And finally, he just said, okay, when this sort of came up again, when this issue came up again, we went straight to the hospital. We went to the ER. They had all the equipment there. They had the right doctors there. You know, they started doing testing. We finally got down to the root cause of the thing. Mm. I'm not interested in only treating symptoms, right? I want to know what's going on and treat that.
Yeah. Well, you know, my wife has had a doctor for over 10 years. And we just found out today that, oh, I'm not going to be taking Medicare anymore. You know, it's just too hard dealing with the government. And so I'm 64. I go on Medicare next year, and I've always believed that it wouldn't be there when I became, you know, 65. And here's my first red flag. The doctors that we want, I mean, almost sounds like Obamacare. The doctors that we want now don't want Medicare. So what good is it? I don't get it.
There are some interesting things about Medicare that you should know. So once you go on Medicare...
Gosh, do I want to know?
yeah, you have to know because you might get it taken care of while it's early. So for one thing, a lot of people retire and they're feeling really good because they have lifetime medical benefits from their employer as part of their pension or whatever. When you go on Medicare, so when you retire and Medicare is your insurance and you've got this other insurance, it turns out that Medicare becomes your primary insurer. And what that means is that Medicare does the approvals. The initial approval for whether something's going to happen or not, yeah, now that's Medicare. So if there's something that could potentially, so for instance, if you've had surgery for weight loss, and you've put off having the operations to get your skin tightened, right? You've had weight loss surgery, and you've lost hundreds of pounds, and now you've got extra skin, but you haven't had that operation to have the skin removed. Well, Medicare considers that to be optional, and they don't approve it to be covered by Medicare. That doesn't mean you can get your secondary insurer to cover it. You know, once Medicare says no, it's done. So you have to find these kinds of things out. And I've just started looking into medical billing, which is a whole can of worms way beyond the looking out for your patient. But it's a whole can of worms that everyone runs into in terrible ways.
Now you depressed me. The whole rest of the day I'm depressed.
Oh, no.
No, I'm kidding. So, I can share, snap out of it. All right.
Exactly. Snap out of it. So I've just started looking into that. It's complex. It's complicated. And it's state by state, a lot of it.
Anytime the government gets involved, it's complex and it's complicated. So, yeah, that's why we would want a single payer healthcare system. Yes, put me down for that one. Oh, I'm kidding, of course. So, is there anything else caregivers should know as we wrap this up? You've discussed a lot.
Right. So,
you know, about patient advocacy services available, or things that will help them out, because they're not going to remember
everything. That's very interesting. There are patient advocacy services available right now. A woman got involved in patient advocacy in the mid, like 2005, 2006. Her name is Tricia Torrey, and she has formed an organization called AdvoConnection.com. Mm-hmm.
AdvoConnection.com, A-D-V-O.
ADVO, connection.com. And there are, and a lot of nurses are going into or forming companies that provide advocacy services. So I believe that there are a lot of things that we can do for ourselves in terms of safeguarding our loved ones. But there are a lot of times when we're trying to decide on complex treatment decisions and we're going to the doctor and that's what we're going to be talking about, where it might be useful to bring an advocate who's been medically trained, who is a has medical expertise with us. And those kinds of services are available. You can look on AdvoConnection, which doesn't charge you, but these advocates will charge you for their
services. About the ones that the insurance companies tell you about that are free? You know, they have an advocacy group for Blue Cross and for Kaiser, and can we trust them, or you know, they're paying the paycheck and we're not sure we're going to get great information.
I would check on them. I'd ask for a second opinion. Once I talk to them, I would ask for a second opinion, simply because it's like going to the hospital social worker.
Yeah.
You know, it feels almost like going to the assistant principal at the high school. Their job is to calm you down, listen to you until you run down, and then calm you down, and then speak gently and pat you on the back and usher you out the door. No. Would I trust them? Not necessarily. I would get a second opinion.
Yeah.
It's just like when, remember years and years ago, 20 years ago, maybe 30, there were insurance companies in this country that denied every claim that came in.
Yep.
And people just paid it because it got denied, unless you challenged it. If you called them up and said, why was this denied? No, this is what my doctor had. This was the treatment code. This is covered in my plan.
Yep.
So I probably wouldn't.
Well, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. It always goes so fast. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Tell me, is there a way that our members can connect with you for additional information or to actually have you become their advocate if they're too shy?
Yes, I have a website called GetTheCareYouDeserve.com, and it's very limited at the moment. I'm in the process of converting this into a more extensive membership website, part of which will be free, and part of this will be paid. But GetTheCareYouDeserve.com, and also the Facebook group, Get the Care You Deserve.
Okay.
Both of those.
Well, that
and I'm
really
on there.
Good.
You can always send me a message, right, on Facebook.
Awesome. And I'm Dave, and my website is caregiverdave.com. Or if you can't remember that, just Google caregiver, because you're a caregiver, and Dave, because Dave's a great name, and you'll find me. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we're here every week, same time. So, goodbye. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Goodbye.